WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Mavericks are a country band with rock and roll roots. Their CD, What a Crying Shame, was number 7 on Spin Magazine's list of 1994's best albums. The entry described lead singer and chief songwriter Raul Malo as the finest rhythm country and blues singer in the land, hands down. What a Crying Shame also made it to the top 10 of the country music charts and went gold. Although Malo now lives in Nashville, he grew up in Miami, and if that's not country enough for you, consider that he's also Cuban-American. The Mavericks have a new CD called Music for All Occasions. Before we meet Raul Malo, let's hear the opening track, Foolish Heart.
Foolish heart.
Malo, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Some people, I imagine, might think it's incongruous for a Cuban-American to be a country singer. Did it ever seem that way to you?
Sure. It still does sometimes. But, you know, I never gave it a second thought. I mean, it is what I love to do. And my parents, you know, certainly have supported me in doing so. And, you know, I grew up in a pretty musical household, so there was all kinds of music around, always. I mean, we listened to everything from Hank Williams to Celia Cruz to Sam Cooke to Bobby Darin. It didn't matter.
Now, what was your neighborhood like when you were growing up?
It was a good neighborhood. You know, it's Cuban immigrant neighborhood, and not very rough, but hardworking people, blue-collar people working every day for a living, you know, just trying to stay in the game.
Can I ask what your parents did for a living?
Well, my dad, when I was young, my dad eventually became a banker. I mean, as far as I can remember, he started in banks. And my mom did the same. My mom had secretarial jobs and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So what was the club scene like in Miami when you started playing in bands?
It was pretty wild, actually. There wasn't a lot of country music, to say the least. I think we were the only country band actually playing in these clubs. They were original music clubs, which was the good thing. And
what do you mean original music clubs?
Well, they were clubs that allowed the bands to come in and play their original music instead of, instead of bands coming in and doing like 4 sets of covers, you know,
mm-hmm.
all night,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing, which is pretty much the norm all throughout this country, unfortunately. And unfortunately, now the scene in Miami has gone to hell as well. There's no more original music club scenes. I think there's only 1 or 2 left. And at the time, there was a dozen clubs where you can go and play your original music. And so at the time, you know, we were allowed to certain creative freedoms, you know, where you could basically go on stage and play whatever you wanted. And sometimes it led to interesting nights because we'd be right on after, you know, some punk rock or some heavy metal band. And here we were playing, you know, I Fall to Pieces or Crazy Arms or something, you know, just something that sounded old and country, and they didn't quite know what to do with us, but they found themselves having a good time and digging it, and that was the whole point, you know, that we were trying to do, that we're still trying to do, is to bring people in that, you know, would normally turn away from country music. You know, we want them to go, well, no, you know, this is cool. I want to go buy a Patsy Cline record. I want to go buy a a Hank Williams record and that kind of thing, you know, and listen to the music, and you know, it was an interesting time because it really allowed us to do whatever we wanted.
Now, all the country people who you've mentioned, you know, Hank Williams, Patsy Cline, they're among the early country performers when country was still not dressed up in a lot of studio accoutrements.
Right.
That's what you prefer?
Well, you know, that's not only in country music. I mean, in pop music as well. You know, basically you have...
True enough, yeah.
We have people now that, you know, you don't even have to be a good singer. You don't have to be a musician. You don't have to be anything. You know, you just got to be this little image with long hair and ripped up jeans and throw a flannel shirt and we'll make you sound good, kid. You know, don't worry about it. And that's the way it goes in all kinds of music. I mean, so, you know, there is something to be said about the old way of, like, just going in and actually having to sing. What a concept. And actually having to play your instruments, you know. That's the problem I have with a lot of today's music.
What year did you actually move to Nashville?
I think I moved here, I'm trying to think, I'm going on 3 years that I've actually been living in Nashville.
Did you go into culture shock at all? Was it a very different place than what you were used to?
Well, it certainly is a different place. I mean, you know, Miami and Nashville, there's a big difference. Number one, you know, you don't have the big Latin influence that you do in Miami. So that's a big part of the change. Quite honestly, I've really enjoyed living here, and I call it home now, and I do like it a lot. And I do miss, you know, certain things that from home, you know, the coffee, the people talking about Fidel, you know, the old men playing dominoes at the park and talking about how, you know, they're going to do this and they're going to do that to Fidel. And, you know, he's still there. Nothing's going to happen. But so I do miss a lot of that, you know, but I'm gone all the time and I'm on the road. So you don't really have time to even think about it. You know, when you get home, you know, my parents just moved up to Nashville as well.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, so that's a little bit of Miami moving up, you know, a bunch of Cubans moving up to Nashville. So I like that, you know, that's fun now.
Probably not a very big Cuban population in Nashville.
No, but funny enough that you mentioned that, I read somewhere in one of the Nashville tourist pamphlets or something that at one point there was a Cuban settlement somewhere in Nashville, and somewhere like along 20th Avenue or something like that. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Now, you're talking about the different influences that you've mm-hmm. drawn on and all the different kinds of music you listen to. On your new CD, Music for All Occasions, you do a song that I know from my past. This is Something Stupid that Frank Sinatra, I mean, the song isn't stupid, the song's called Something Stupid, and Frank and Nancy Sinatra recorded it back in 1967. It rose to the top of the charts.
Right.
You do a duet of this with Trisha Yearwood. What inspired you to record this?
Oh, you know, it's I don't know. It's just one of those songs that I grew up listening to, and we wanted to do a duet with Trisha. We start going through all the different kinds of scenarios. What kind of song can we do? And we didn't want to do the typical country music duet. You know, we didn't want to do a George and Tammy Wynette song. We didn't want to do a John Cash and June Carter song. So we just we found this one and we gave it a shot. You know, we just thought, well, you know, we'll see how it goes. We'll give it, you know, worst comes to worst, we'll have a laugh. And when we were done with it, we really liked it. And we kept it on the record.
I like it, too. Before I play it, I just want to ask you one thing. Didn't you always think when Frank Sinatra and his daughter Nancy sang this together, I mean, don't the laws of God and man prohibit a father and daughter from singing a love duet like this?
Yeah, but it's Frank Sinatra. The rules don't apply to him.
Okay. So here
he changes them, baby.
So here's the Mavericks recording of Something Stupid from their new album, Music for All Occasions, with my guest singer, Raul Malo.
I know I'd stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. And afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. Though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone with you. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and all the nights so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you.
Raul Malo and Tricia Yearwood from the new Maverick CD, Music for All Occasions. We'll talk more with Raul Malo after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Raul Malo, lead singer and chief songwriter of the Mavericks. I know you had an earlier album, I believe independently released, in which your songs were, some of them were more political. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you writing different kinds of songs then?
No, I wasn't writing different kinds of songs. Well, I guess in a way I was. I mean, you know, part of that, the feelings behind all those songs is that, you know, you basically have your whole life to write your first record. So these were songs that I had written, you know, in all my years there in Miami since I started writing songs, you know, and they happened to touch, you know, political, social nerves, you know, and they're still songs that I play live. You know, we still sing these songs live, and they're important to us. But I realize now that at that point in time, you know, those songs were written from a real personal point of view. And to tell you the truth, I had a problem at the time wanting to put those songs on the record. I was outvoted by everybody else. I don't regret that they're on the record, and I don't regret the record that was made. But I always felt that they were a little too personal. You know, the album was very much about the life and times of the Mavericks in Miami. And I always thought that, well, the people around us know what these songs are about, but, you know, the rest of the world or the country won't know unless we go out and explain it to them, and then, you know, we go out and play. And it's that whole scenario, but that's you know, that's my take on it, you know.
Gee, could I ask you for an example of a lyric that was very personal?
Sure. You know, in Hell to Paradise, the song about my aunt leaving Cuba and coming over here was inspired by her, but anybody who's been in Miami knows somebody who's been through this, because we all came over from somewhere. And the funny thing was, when we were touring this song, this album, I remember going to all parts of the country and playing the song and explaining it. There's a little part on the show where I explain the song. And I remember having all kinds of people, all walks of life, coming up to me after and going, wow, you know, I remember older generations. I remember, you know, seeing the Statue of Liberty when I came over from Poland or from Czechoslovakia or from other parts of Europe, you know. And So it touched a lot of people's nerves, you know, in that it not only dealt with the Cuban immigrants, but I think we're all immigrants in this country, and we all came over from somewhere. So it was neat that it affected other people. And one of the lyrics is, "This 90-mile trip has taken 30 years to make. They tried to keep forever what was never theirs to take. I cursed and scratched the devil's hand as he stood in front of me. One last drag from his big cigar, and he finally set me free." That's the last verse on the song From Hell to Paradise.
Now, do you still write songs like that anymore?
No, because now I'm making a lot of money. I'm voting Republican, and I'm part of the elite class now, and playing golf and all that stuff, and nothing matters to me except money. Money.
An honest answer, if I've ever heard one.
Well, you know... no,
I mean, what I meant was that your songs now are, I mean, they're love songs. They're about falling in love, falling out of love, relationships
gone
bad.
They're sassy and stupid, baby. But they're money. Money. No, I really felt that if, you know, for the second album, for What a Crying Shame, I didn't want to do a Hell to Paradise number two. I felt it was time to move on. And I've kind of grown to feel that as artists, you know, there are too many of us trying to solve the world's problems, and I'm not so sure that I want to or that I can. And I figured I want to entertain people, and I want to bring a smile to their faces rather than remind them of grim realities and of harsh circumstances or whatever, you know, in their lives. You know, if they come out to a show, I want them to have a good time and leave with a smile on their face and go home going, yeah, you know, I can, you know, handle anything that comes my way.
My question was not, by the way, meant as a rebuke. Like, how come you're not writing more political songs anymore?
No, I know.
Yeah,
I'm just, you know, this is kind of like therapy for me. I'm letting out a lot of animosity with you.
Well, good. That means
no,
I can
I'm
charge
kidding.
You when this is over. So, yeah. Now, I want to ask you about another record. Your recording of Blue Moon was featured on the Apollo 13 soundtrack. And I know when we played it on our show after an interview with the director, Ron Howard, we just got so many calls from listeners. It really, people really had a strong positive response to that.
Oh, good.
How did you get asked to record the song for the movie?
There's always a they. The producers of Apollo 13, and I guess Ron Howard, being a director, they wanted a new version of Elvis's version of Blue Moon.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, there's so many versions of Blue Moon, you know.
Elvis's is really spooky.
Yeah, it's real, and that's the version that we emulated, you know, and we did it in an afternoon where we recorded the song for the Buddy Holly tribute album that's coming out with Nick Lowe producing,
mm-hmm.
And we almost did it, funny enough, almost as an afterthought, you know, we did it, well, they want this thing for the movie, let's just give it a shot, it may be in the movie, it may not be. So it was that kind of thing where there was no pressure, and it was all live, and we just, you know, we made a tape of it and sent it to him, and the next thing we know, it's in the movie, we're making a video, we're out in L.A., and we're getting all this press from the single release and all this kind of stuff. So it was, it's fun that it worked out that way, but it wasn't intended to be that. It was just, it was almost an afterthought kind of thing.
Raul Malo is the lead singer and chief songwriter of the Mavericks. Their new CD is called Music for All Occasions. Here's Blue Moon from the Apollo 13 soundtrack.
Blue Moon. Without a love of my own, saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. What I was there for, you heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. Without a love of my own.
This is Fresh Air.